From KUER News in Salt Lake City, this is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Religious conservatives have always worried about pornography, even before the internet brought more access and more graphic images. But State Senator Todd Weiler says the internet has brought porn into the status of being a public health crisis. He's not talking about banning pornography, but he has proposed a resolution he hopes will get a conversation started that could lead to what he calls more control over access. So today in the program, we're asking whether porn is a public health crisis. One of our guests says there has been a seismic change in the way porn has come to shape or distort a young adult's sexuality because porn sex is different, really different from real sex. But another guest says these arguments are usually based on hyperbole and morality and not real science. So you can see where the battle lines are drawn. Join us after the news.
Still thinking about that conversation on StoryCorps? Or the story you caught last weekend on Snap Judgment? The voices you hear on public radio stay with you. You can have a lasting effect on public radio, too. KUER sustainers give ongoing monthly contributions, providing a steady stream of income so we can continue to bring you the programs you can't get out of your head. Become a sustainer today at KUER.org.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. It's hard to talk about pornography for the obvious reasons. Conversations about sex can be graphic, so be forewarned, by the way. But it's also hard to talk about because it's intensely personal. And in fact, this is one of the arguments against State Senator Todd Weiler's resolution making its way through the legislature this year. The senator isn't proposing a ban. He's proposing a resolution, which is more like a statement or a declaration. And he's hoping that something can be done because he thinks pornography has become a public health crisis. But back to the argument, people's perceptions about the portrayals of sex are all over the map. It's personal. For some, these images titillate and excite. For others, they're humiliating and dehumanizing. Later on the program, one of our guests, a professor of women's studies, says, let's be honest, porn sex, the kind of sex portrayed in most pornography these days, is not real sex. It's not about fantasy or play. It's debased and formulaic and addictive, and it's distorting people's sense of sexuality. So that's what we're talking about today. And I want to make something fairly clear at this point. We're talking about pornography, so there may be some quite graphic language. Certainly the conversation is for the grown-ups in the room, so if you're driving around with your kids, now might be a good time to turn off the radio. We'll begin with Todd Weiler, the senator I mentioned, Republican representing District 23 in Davis and Salt Lake counties in the state Senate, the sponsor of Senate Concurrent Resolution on Public Health Crisis, as it's called, joining us today from the Capitol. And Senator Weiler, welcome to you. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks, Doug.
I want to begin with your impetus. What is it that got you started thinking about this?
Well, I represent Bountiful. I have a group of very concerned citizens there that meet with me a couple times a year saying, what are we going to do about pornography? And so I have actually been running bills for them, trying to be responsive to my constituents for 3 or 4 years now. This is the first one that's gotten international attention by far. But I do, you know, just in my own circle of influence, I have seen the devastating effects of pornography on families. I've dabbled in divorce law as a divorce attorney on and off for 20 years, mm-hmm. and I've been an LDS bishop in my area, and I've seen firsthand the impacts it can have on relationships and self-esteem and families.
There are these reports, and I wanted to get your sense of this, that show Utah's one of the states with the highest rates of pornography in the United States, which I don't get because it's a state that's overwhelmingly conservative and religious. Why would that be?
Well, it's the highest rates of online paid pornography. So we're about double the number of paid subscriptions per 100,000 people at, I think, 5, as is California at 2.5. So pornography is affordable, it's accessible, and it's anonymous. And that makes it very, I think, tempting for, you know, people, not always men, but usually men in maybe a conservative families or religious families who are looking for, you know, that that type of stimulation. And I also think that, you know, we don't have a lot of adult shops. We have some in Utah, but I think it's much fewer than you would find in a state like California. And I think that contributes to it as well.
Does it mean that it doesn't matter if you're necessarily conservative or necessarily religious? This is just an inclination of people.
Yeah, I think that it crosses all boundaries, religious boundaries, partisan boundaries, et cetera, for sure.
Yeah. It's interesting the reaction you've gotten, as you said, international attention to something like this. Why do you think that is? I mean, one of the things you've mentioned is, here's how you put, you've been mocked internationally as well. How do you explain the reaction? What do you say?
Well,
about
I think that pornography and masturbation and some of those words are funny words. They're the butt of a lot of jokes. And my resolution doesn't deal with anything but pornography, but I got some calls from some reporters in New York and trying to ask me if I was trying to ban one or both of of those two. And, you know, some headlines even from the Salt Lake Tribune about masturbation, which, yeah, you know, I think it's just kind of a mocking and scorn. And I get that. I have a sense of humor. I'm not a prude. But, you know, when we're talking about devastating families and relationships and self-esteems, I think that is more important than the jokes that can be made.
Let me read something that came from Salon.com, which is a sort of well-known liberal online magazine. The writer Amanda Marcotte called your resolution, in particular, and resolutions like this or ideas like this, porn hysteria. And she said that it's a distillation of the contradictions of modern fundamentalism, using words borrowed from feminism, for example, as a cover for these anti-sex attitudes. I mean, you talk about in your resolution that pornography treats women as objects, for example. I wanted to give you a chance to respond to that. And the contention is essentially that you're kind of reframing conservative morality under the guise of public health. This is just something that a conservative fundamentalist is trying to do.
No, I understand the arguments. I think that since Terry Crews, the Old Spice commercial guy, has gone public with his porn addiction and the impacts it's had on his family, a lot of the clamor has calmed down. This is a real addiction, and it's affecting people. And let me just say, in the 1950s and through the 1970s, when I was a kid, you had vending machines with cigarettes, tobacco products available to anybody who walked up with 2 quarters. We changed that and changed advertising because we embraced as a society that tobacco was addictive and harmful, things that the tobacco industry had denied for decades before that. Once we embraced tobacco as something that's addictive and harmful, we took steps to protect children from tobacco. We didn't ban it, but we tried to protect our children. That's what I'm trying to do with pornography, not trying to ban it, but should it be available so accessibly, 2 or 3 clicks away, some of the most hardcore images that anybody can imagine. And what I tell people is to pretend to have all of this material 2 or 3 clicks away for children to access, mm-hmm, and to pretend that it's not going to have an impact on their brain development and on our society and culture is simply naive.
You know, it's always difficult to make a causal connection between pornography and some of the things you worry about, like addiction and sexual aggression, those kinds of things. Do you feel like you're at a point where you have the solid science to back you up?
Well, everything in my resolution is based on most of it social science that was presented at a symposium last summer at the U.S. Capitol by the National Center on Sexual Exploitation. So every sentence in my resolution is footnoted with research. I have been contacted by a neuroscientist for the U.S. Navy and from a neuroscientist at UCLA, and both of them believe that pornography is addictive, at least for 2 to 3% of the population. But here's the rub with hard science. We would have to take a control group of people who've never been exposed to pornography, and you'd have to compulsively expose half of that group to pornography for at least 6 months, mm-hmm, and then run tests on the differences. I would not support that research. No ethical scientist would willingly expose people to pornography and then test the differences. And so what we're left with is a chicken the egg theory. So people who have exposed themselves compulsively to pornography, we always have the question, did a sexual deviancy or compulsion drive them to pornography, or did the pornography manifest these differences in these people? And you can't answer that with hard science without that control test group that I wouldn't support because I think it's unethical.
Yeah. Our next guest is a clinical psychologist who treats sexuality issues. And he says, in fact, Senator, there's a wealth of evidence that shows increased porn access actually correlates with a decrease in sexual violence and a decrease in sexual crimes, that it's some kind of outlet maybe. I'm not sure what that means or what that says. We can maybe talk about that. Maybe just explain what you make of that little tidbit.
Let me tell you, the U.S. Navy, which is dealing with tens of thousands of young men every year coming into the Navy who have been compulsively exposed to pornography, they have concluded just the opposite. And they've hired a neuroscientist who reached out to me. They are having unprecedented problems with soldiers or their Navy men maintaining relationships, domestic violence incidents. It has surged, and they trace most of that to hardcore pornography addiction.
He also mentions this. I found this really interesting, and I'm going to get him to sort of explore it. But he said that some research actually shows that this belief in porn addiction is the thing that actually causes some feelings of distress, and it can cause feelings of depression. I'm not sure if you know anything about that, but this idea
I'm not a psychologist, and I'm not a scientist, and I don't play one on TV, but
right.
I believe, just in my own human experience, whenever you are acting against what your values are, what your religious beliefs are, I do think that that causes an extreme amount of stress and in some instances, depression. But that doesn't mean that pornography addiction is a fiction. And, you know, Patrick Carnes, of course, was a pioneering author on pornography and sex addictions, and a lot of people have followed him. But again, I'm not really interested in delving into the science. I can show you tens of thousands of people whose lives have been destroyed by pornography. Many of them have reached out to me in the last 2 months and are applauding these efforts.
Another one of the guests later on the program is Gail Dines, who speaks about porn culture, how it's hijacked sexuality. I mean, she's on your side, clearly. But what she says is that one of the reasons porn has caught fire is that young people lack a good, healthy sex education. Now, as you know, it wasn't so long ago that a committee in the House blocked a bill, a sort of comprehensive human sexuality course that was opt-in. What do you make of that? I mean, it seems like what people like Gail Dines and others are saying is, okay, you're right, Senator, but you need better, more comprehensive sex education. Do you agree?
You know, there are 19 states that have comprehensive sex education, so Utah is one of 31 states that don't. I don't believe you'll find any difference in those 19 states with porn addiction or porn problems with teenagers than you would in the 31 states. Utah is you know, because of our culture, people just assume that we're kind of backwoods and backpedaled on these issues. And yes, we're not one of the 19 states that has comprehensive, but we have the middle of the road sex education. I would have actually probably supported Representative King's bill because it was opt-in, but it didn't get to the Senate. But I believe that people that are trying to link my, you know, porn resolution to a sex ed problem in Utah, they really have their own agenda that they're trying to push, and I don't think there's any direct correlation between the two.
Why? Why don't you think there would be a connection between teaching someone in a more comprehensive way healthy ideas about sexuality because they're going to be exposed to unhealthy ones?
For the very reason I just said, we have 19 states with comprehensive sex education, and I don't see any data that it's different there than the 31 states that have less comprehensive sex
ed. But Senator, you're saying that you don't really care about the hard science related to a causal link between pornography and sexual aggression, those kinds of things. Why would you worry about a direct link related to sex education? And do you know what I mean? It seems like that's a contradiction.
I reject the premise that the only reason people are accessing or teenagers are accessing pornography is because they have too many questions that were unanswered after their health class in school. I don't believe in my heart of hearts that there's a causal connection there.
Let me ask you finally, we mentioned, you've talked about the fact that there's a sort of an inclination to sort of poke fun. Mocked internationally, as you put it. And I'm sure you sort of expected that reaction. But does that give you some indication, Senator, of what you're up against? I mean, it seems society has grown somewhat at least your perspective might be that it's grown somewhat more permissive, maybe even more accepting of pornography.
Well, let me just tell you, England, which is much more progressive than the U.S. is on sexuality and nudity, they have made their entire internet porn-free unless, as a default, unless you opt into pornography. Mm-hmm. That's ultimately what I'd like to see the United States do, but it would have to be done on a federal level. And Piers Morgan, when I was on the doctor's show last week, and Candace and even Whoopi Goldberg, when The View discussed this, many of them were supportive of my efforts to try to protect children from pornography. So if I were trying to ban pornography, which is a First Amendment issue, according to the U.S. Supreme Court, it would be one issue. But anyone who argues that we shouldn't be protecting 8-year-old children from pornography, because that's the average age of first exposure, I would just say that their priorities are wrong.
That's Senator Todd Weiler. He represents District 23. It's Bountiful, Woods Cross, North Salt Lake. Did I get them all?
Yeah, Rose Park.
And Rose Park.
Centerville.
Great. Centerville. Wow, big. Okay. Senator, thanks very much for the time.
Thank you, Doug.
801-585-WEST is the number, by the way, if you'd like to join the conversation. Our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. We'll take a break and be back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we're asking one of the questions at the heart of this resolution making its way through the Utah legislature this year. That the question is pornography a public health crisis? State Senator Todd Weiler, as you heard just a moment ago, says it is. And he says porn in the digital age is different from the Playboy and Penthouse stuff of your father, your grandfather. It's more accessible these days, that's for sure, but also more degrading, more graphic. And Weiler and others say there's this connection between pornography and addiction and sexual aggression. That's what we're talking about today. And joining us now on the program is David Lay. He's a clinical psychologist based in Albuquerque, New Mexico, a columnist also for Psychology Today. He's the author of the book The Myth of Sex Addiction, joining us from the studios of NPR member station KUNM in Albuquerque. And Dr. Lay, welcome to you. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Well, let me get to your initial reaction to proposals like Senator Weiler's. You've said they're based generally on hyperbole and morality. Give me your just sort of initial reaction.
You know, in contrast to what Senator Weiler was saying, I hope that I am not coming across in any kind of mocking sort of way. I think that Senator Weiler is voicing the concerns that lots of people have, that our society is changing very quickly when it comes to sexuality and particularly when it comes to technology. And change is hard. Change is really scary. And I think that all of us would like to put the brakes on and slow things down. Oftentimes, there's an idea that restricting access to pornography would slow that change down. But unfortunately, a lot of times, it is more like fighting the tide.
There have been those who say Senator Weiler and other anti-porn crusaders are trying to reframe conservative morality under the guise of public health. It's one of the questions I put to him. Are you there? Do you think that might be happening?
I do. I mean, these concerns largely come from very conservative, morally based groups, and they have now for 40 or 50 years. I mean, you mentioned some of the early Meese Commission kinds of reports and such like that. In the early 1980s, Playboy magazine was removed from the shelves of 7-Eleven under the idea that it was addictive pornography. Porn addiction as a label was being used back then with regards to print material. And that was an effort that was led by Focus on the Family and James Dobson, again, a socially conservative, religiously based group concerned about changing sexuality and enforcing conservative social attitudes and expectations around sexuality. Unfortunately, these issues are inextricably linked with our social conservative values and expectations towards sexuality. One of the things that I think is really important when we look at that is that lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender individuals who don't fit some of those socially conservative expectations are oftentimes left out of these conversations. And their needs, relationships, and values are critically important and not involved in these kinds of debates.
What about the idea that this is – and this is a concern among some groups that these kinds of resolutions by these conservative groups are just a way – at least in sort of in the wake of the Supreme Court decision legalizing same-sex marriage, that this is just a way to sort of shore up heterosexual marriage as, you know, the only, you know, acceptable outlet or the acceptable context for sex. Do you think there's something in that?
I think that right now pornography and internet pornography is the battleground over social expectations around heterosexuality, homosexuality, and our society's values towards sexuality. Look at the popularity of 50 Shades of Grey. You know, Senator Wyler mentioned Patrick Carnes as the leader and forebearer of sex addiction. But Patrick Carnes said in the 90s that BDSM kinds of behaviors were inherently sexually addictive. But, you know, how many 50 million women have read and bought 50 Shades of Grey? I don't think they're all addicted to BDSM. Unfortunately, what we're doing when we talk about these words, porn addiction and sex addiction, is we're really saying shame on you. We're really saying you should be ashamed and afraid of your sexuality because I am. But we shouldn't be imposing those kinds of values on people, at least not using medical and scientific terms that don't hold up. I am fine if Senator Wyler and conservative groups like LDS or Fight the New Drug want to oppose pornography from a moral perspective. That is their right, and I cheer them on. But don't use medical or scientific language unless that is something that is your bailiwick. You know, Senator Wyler said, well, I'm not a scientist. Well, I am. I am a psychologist, and I can tell you that these concepts are more based on shame and morality than they are any kind of demonstrable clear research on health or psychological effects.
I want to get to some of the science, at least a few pieces, the ones we can get to in just a moment.
Sure.
Here. But let me just mention something that I said to the senator. I mentioned those reports that show Utah is one of the states with the highest rates of pornography in the United States. What do you make of that? Because it does seem baffling. If this is a really – maybe it's not so baffling. Maybe it makes sense to the senator it does. Everyone – whether they admit it or not, wherever they might be in their sort of religious views, seems to go to porn from time to time. What do you make of that, though?
You know, I agree with Senator Wyler when he said that, you know, these sexual desires, maybe these weren't his exact words, but these sexual desires are a normal part of humanity and that people are going to seek these things out. You know, I was at a research conference and some researchers from BYU were talking about research on pornography, and they found that the more religious people in their studies were accessing the hardest non-pornographic material they could find. So in other words, they weren't going to hardcore pornography because that was against their religious beliefs, but they were going to the most salacious material that they could access, things like Victoria's Secrets or Frederick's Hollywood catalogs, etc., for that kind of stimulation. And I think that Senator Wyler and I are in agreement that this desire, this interest is intrinsic and natural to human beings. I think the challenge that happens in Utah is that for one reason or another, and I am not, you know, a Utah native, I can't speak to this, but for one reason or another, folks in Utah really struggle with understanding the naturalness of those sexual desires and feeling okay with it. And so they can't talk about those desires publicly. They can't talk about or express their sexuality. You know, unfortunately, again, bisexual and gay individuals are more often called addicted to porn, not because pornography has changed them, but because they're more often going to pornography as a secret, private, safe way to express and explore their sexuality that the social environment around them suppresses or condemns.
Let me read a few of the sections from Senator Wyler's resolution and get you to respond to whether or not we have science that can, in fact, back some of this stuff up. Whereas pornography use is linked to lessening desire in young men to marry and dissatisfaction in marriage and infidelity. Any social science, any science at all that shows, in fact, that the increased use of pornography leads to dissatisfaction in marriage and it leads to young men not wanting to get married? Anything about that?
Doug, I mean, I think not to shine you on, but you're smart because you said this a little while ago. The question is causality.
Yeah.
And when we look at changing marital values, the decreases or the wait times to get married that are happening in today's society, it's kind of a stretch to blame that on pornography and to say that porn is causing that. In fact, I see thousands of people who say that pornography has actually decreased infidelity because when they can seek out pornography and masturbate privately and seek that sexual satisfaction covertly without stepping outside the marriage, they oftentimes do so, that it is an easier, safer outlet. So unfortunately, I think that we are blaming porn because it is sensational and because it is kind of an easy target when really there are dramatic social changes that are happening around sexuality that are very complicated, and we're not paying attention to those.
Here's another section from the resolution. Whereas the early exposure to pornography is leading to low self-esteem, body image disorders, an increase in problematic sexual activity at younger ages. I wanted to get you to respond to that because you have some studies. You've cited one in particular from the UK where you couldn't, in fact, find a sort of substantiate that or find a connection here. You want to talk about that one?
You know, I think that's a really valuable kind of comment. And this is – your listeners can find it. It's a study called Basically Porn is Everywhere. And the United Kingdom government funded this very large study looking to try to identify, is porn having a negative impact, especially on our youth? And they couldn't really find conclusive evidence. But I think the more important thing about that study is that they looked at 40,000 articles about pornography. And of that 40,000, only around 227 of those articles were deemed scientifically useful. So that is the challenge when we talk about the science around pornography. It is that much of what is published about pornography is tainted by moral biases and assumptions on both sides. Some people want to find that there's no harm from pornography, and some people want to find that there is harm. Unfortunately, as a result, most of the literature that is out there, we can't really make good, careful interpretations from it because it is so biased. Now, there have been some important studies in the Netherlands, where they looked at the long-term impact of pornography on adolescents. And they found that pornography exposure explained less than 1% of the variance in these youths' behavior, as opposed to other more important things, things like education, family environment, drug or substance abuse, history of sexual or physical trauma in the family. Unfortunately, again, we are paying too much attention to pornography because we're scared of it and because it's an easy target, instead of talking about some of the really important things that do impact adolescent relationships and sexual behavior. Things like sex education and providing those youth a healthy, safe environment to live in and learn in.
But here's another section from the resolution. Whereas exposure to pornography often serves as children's and youth's sex education and shapes their sexual templates. Here's one you say that you agree with Senator Wyler, at least on that point. Though I have to say, I'm not sure that's what he was saying earlier in our conversation, but I mentioned last week a House committee killed overwhelmingly this comprehensive sex education bill. It was an opt-in measure. It was parent-approved. So I'm guessing you're seeing something of a mixed message coming from Utah lawmakers, saying no to a comprehensive sex education bill, but going along with an anti-porn resolution.
Yeah, it is unfortunately a mixed message. I mean, When we teach youth how to drive motor vehicles, we don't sit them down in front of the movies Fast and Furious and say, you know, here, go ahead and learn from this. Unfortunately, that is kind of what's happening with pornography. Because we are not giving youth real-world pragmatic sex education, and unfortunately, I think that, again, society and our world has changed so dramatically around sex that sexual values, sexual behaviors, sexual permissiveness, that sexual education for youth shouldn't be a static thing. It should be something that is constantly changing. Just even, you know, talking about how to incorporate in a healthy way a teenager's sexuality with smartphones and how to deal with the question of sending, you know, sexual pictures back and forth with teenagers. Those are the real world today. And unfortunately, most folks, kind of like Senator Wyler, and I don't mean to mock him in this, want to bury their heads in the sand and turn back the clock to a time when we didn't have those issues. But when you try to do that, you alienate those youth, and then they go find the information however and wherever they can.
Is pornography addictive? Can't we say by now that pornography is or isn't addictive?
Well, I think we have said it pretty conclusively for 40 years now. You know, the American Psychiatric Association for 40 years has rejected the concept that pornography is addictive, and consistently they've done so on the idea that the science does not support it. Unfortunately, the concept of porn addiction, the concept of addiction in general, is just so easy. It's a lazy way of saying you're doing something too much and I don't like it. You know, today we are addicted to using the word addiction to describe anything we don't like that somebody else is doing. I think we need a 12-step group for that. I think we need a 12-step group to stop using the word addiction. But one of the really important scientific things that has come out in the past couple of years is that we're now seeing that concept, that identity of being addicted to porn actually hurts people, that it leads people to be afraid and ashamed and hate their own sexuality regardless of how much porn they actually use. That when people identify as a porn addict, they are identifying as somebody who hates those natural sexual desires that Senator Wyler and I agree are there, and treat those internal sexual desires as an illness. I think, again, we should be helping people in Utah to have a conversation about why it's not okay to talk about those desires and needs in Utah. I think that if we had that kind of conversation, we would have fewer problems with people using porn in problematic ways. Now, in other societies, in Scandinavia, for instance, where there is a much more open conversation around sexuality across the lifespan, they don't have porn addiction treatment programs and they don't need them. I think that's a really important conversation to explore in Utah, where this is such a problem.
You know, finding that causal connection is always difficult to do, as you said. But for a lot of these people, and I'm guessing Senator Wyler is among them, it just makes common sense. And we're going to be talking about this with our next guest in a moment. But when the kinds of graphic images that are so accessible these days to young people and everyone, the ideas of gagging, violent anal sex, calling women whores and all of these – I mean, we're going to talk about that as a kind of formula with her. But for a lot of people, that just common sense would say that has to have some kind of influence on a person's psyche, repeated exposure to crap like that.
And, you know, the challenge is that is the sensational image of pornography. But unfortunately, hard science in this situation has really identified that that kind of violence in pornography is actually much less than the violence that youth see in video games and in mainstream media and television. I think that violence really is a very important issue that we should be discussing as a society in general. But we shouldn't be separating out pornography from any other form of media. I think we need to have that conversation about all media and about all of our society these days. Pornography that includes violence doesn't have any special magical impact or effect compared to any other form of media.
It's Dr. David Lay. He's the author of the book, The Myth of Sex Addiction. We should mention he's going to be in Salt Lake City in May, May 13th. He'll be a guest of the Healing Group. It's a mental health clinic based here in Utah. There are details about that on our website, radiowest.org. Dr. Lay, thanks for the time.
Thank you. I look forward to being out there Friday the 13th.
Great. Good. We need to take another break. We'll be back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we've been talking about some of the questions raised by a resolution in the Utah legislature this year that says pornography is a public health crisis. We heard from State Senator Todd Weiler earlier on the program. I want to point out again something maybe the obvious. We're talking about the potential effects of pornography, so the conversation is sensitive in nature, and you should keep that in mind. Certainly a conversation for the grown-ups in the room. Joining us now on the program is Gail Dines, a professor of sociology and women's studies at Wheelock College in Boston, Massachusetts. She's the author of the book Pornland, How Porn Has Hijacked Our Sexuality. She's also founder of a public health nonprofit called Culture Reframed. And Professor Dines is joining us from a studio in Boston. Professor, welcome. Thanks for being with us.
It's a pleasure. Thank you for inviting me.
Senator Weiler said earlier that I'm not sure if you heard, but he said he's been mocked internationally because of this proposal. I wanted to get your sense of that. What about you? You've pointed out in your book, anytime you criticize pornography, you get slapped with this anti-sex label. I imagine is it pretty intense? Has it happened to you?
Oh, yes, of course. And actually, my response to that is that I am anti-porn because I'm pro-sex. I don't think you can be pro-sex and pro-porn at the same time, because pornography is so anti-sex in the way it shows relationships, in the way it depicts women as disposable sex objects. And also, I'd like to point out in the way it kind of shows men as corrupt, immoral, bankrupt. So I would argue that pornography has a very negative attitude, not just of sex, but also of women and men. So I think it's completely ridiculous to suggest those of us who argue that porn is a public health issue in any way anti-sex. It's the opposite.
One of the things you say in your book is that porn sex, which is different, as you said, from real sex, is not based on play and imagination. It's an industrial product. And this is an important theme in your book. Would you explain what you mean by that?
Yes, because I think what I always say is that, you know, porn is to sex what McDonald's is to food. It's the commodification and monetization of a real human desire. So let's separate pornography from sex. Pornography is a multi-billion dollar a year industry. It is what we now call a mature industry in the way that we have consolidation, competition, concentration, specifically the point of distribution. And so I think we need to talk about pornography as an industry. And specifically, when you think about this, it makes sense, for example, why we have the free porn sites. The goal of the free porn sites, from a business model perspective, was to actually attract in those who couldn't afford to buy pornography with a credit card, namely children and youth, because the younger you get them, the more likely you are to build habitual and addictive frameworks for sex, for pornography. So I think they're very smart businessmen. And when we start talking about pornography as a business, you take it out of the concept of morals, as I heard Dr. David Lay trying to do. Mm-hmm. And let's get more into the concept of, should we allow a predatory corporation absolute unfettered access to our kids? Because free porn is the equivalent of me standing outside of middle school handing out free cigarettes. It's me going up to kids saying, would you like to try a Marlboro? Or would you like to try a free whiskey? And by the way, I'll be here tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow. So if you'd like more, just come and get it. And I think the porn industry was very smart in terms of being a predatory industry to hand it out for free. So by the time we know the average age of first start viewing porn is 11. So by the time they're 18, these kids have actually developed their sexual template in a way that is in keeping with pornography and makes regular sex boring, neutral and kind of vanilla, so they'll keep going back to their pornography. So you're actually building both social and psychological pathways to porn addiction by giving it to them at a very early age.
Tell us what you mean when you say porn. When you're talking about porn sex, for example, because you're not talking about ordinary sex. You're talking about gonzo sex is the word. The point where I should say to listeners, this may be the sort of graphic point, but I want to invite you, Professor Dines, to be as explicit as you can without maybe saying the F word. I think it's important that you explain what it is that's out there.
Well, I think you're absolutely right. And I'll tell you why. I do many lectures in hospitals, to professional organizations, social workers, pediatricians. And most people, especially over the age of 35 to 40, don't actually know what I'm talking about. When I'm talking about pornography, I'm not talking about your father's Playboy. I never thought, after doing this research for 25 years, that I would look back as those of the good old days with nostalgia, right? Who knew that a woman smiling in a cornfield with no clothes would all be looking back with nostalgia. What I want to talk about is what's real out there in the world of a kid with no credit card. So your hormones are raging. You've got no proper sex education. I agree with David Lay on this. We need really good sex education, but you really don't have it. So you put porn into Google. What do you come up with? Well, the first page is where you're going to go, which is going to be the free porn sites like YouPorn or Pornhub. No matter what category you click onto, and there's about 86 categories, which include things like anal, MILF, teen, it doesn't matter what category you pick on. What you're going to get is the same set of formulaic, repetitive images. And specifically, when I was writing Pornland, I just documented the breadcrumbs of a 11-year-old. Where will he go? So you click on, and what you're going to see over and over again are women being gagged with a penis till they're almost vomiting. And in some cases, they do vomit and they keep the vomit scenes in. You're going to have women clutching at their throats, trying to get the hand off their throats because they're choking, because the penis is stopping them breathing. And also often in porn, for added spice, the men hold the nose of the women so they really can't breathe. You're going to get brutal anal sex. I mean brutal, to the point that the average woman in porn can only survive 3 months till her body collapses in on itself, through to anal prolapses, through to gonorrhea of the eye, chlamydia of the anus, all the kinds of diseases we know that women in porn get. So you're going to be catapulted into a world of sexual violence. But I want us for a moment to step back and think of that 11-year-old boy. I have a son, and I'm thinking, what would have happened if my son at 11 would have put porn into Google? What he would have been expecting, what I assume most boys are, is maybe pictures of breasts, maybe pictures of people having sex. What they are not anticipating is being catapulted into this world of absolute overt sexual violence. And so the question is, what happens to that boy who thought he was going to see breasts? What he's going to see is a level of violence that I think is going to traumatize him. He's going to see images that he did not expect. But the pornographers are very smart. They say things like, are you man enough to stand this? Can you stand this to come back for more? We know what you want and we're giving it to you. So what 11-year-old boy is going to say, no, I'm not man enough, and go running away screaming? So he's going to stay. And this is how the pornographers are really manipulating our boys. They are traumatizing them. So in that boy's stomach, where he thought he was going for arousal and ejaculation, he's got sexual arousal. He's also got fear. He's got shame. He's got anxiety. He's got a toxic stew, a mess. And what I would argue is that toxic stew is actually a form of trauma. And we know that the more you traumatize somebody, the more they are to go back to the site at which you traumatize them. So actually, you're building into the business model of porn traumatizing boys as a way to turn them into habitual and addictive users. So that's what's really going on in the porn industry. And I would say to any parents out there that if you're really concerned about the well-being of your son, you have to get hold of this issue. I think what's going on in Utah, by the way, is not unusual. This is being discussed now in Sweden. It's being discussed in Norway, in Iceland. I just got back from Poland. Everywhere I go in Europe, governments and government bodies and non-government bodies are talking about porn as a public health issue. What's happened in Utah is really you're just joining into a movement that's already caught traction all over the Western world. And I think a really important part about defining pornography as a public health issue is we're not talking about morals. We're not talking about censorship. We're talking about education, and we're talking about adults taking responsibility for the well-being of the next generation.
The portrayal of women seems particularly disturbing. You boil these portrayals down to a few essential characteristics. Women always ready for sex, as you say, always enthusiastic to do whatever men want, no matter how painful or humiliating or harmful, and always uses of the words whore, for example, or slut, and all of this idea that they have a price. How do you explain that as being appealing to people?
You know, I don't think that boys go to porn with that. But I think what happens is pornography, like all media, socializes its consumers. Hmm. And I think what happens when boys go to pornography, they get socialized into thinking of these women. And the words they use, whore is, by the way, the nicest word they use. I can't say on the radio the other words. But you never hear about women in porn. You hear about sluts, whores, and other words I can't mention. And the reason they do that is because that boy has got women in his life he loves, probably his mother, his sisters, his aunts, etc. He probably could not bear to see what is happening to that woman in porn happen to the women he loves. So what you have to do is you have to dehumanize the women in pornography. You have to say to that boy or that man, this woman is nothing like the women you love. She's not like your sister or your mother. She's a whore. She's a slut. She's a bitch. She's a different breed. So while it might look like she's in pain and while it might look like she's crying, and believe me, many of these women do cry as this is happening to them because they're in such intense pain, what you're doing is what groups have always done. When you select a group to be oppressed, whether it be people of color, whether it be Jews, whether it be homosexual, lesbian, non-identified heteronormative people, you dehumanize them in the eye of the oppressor. And that makes the violence that you then do to them acceptable. So this is a socializing process that they're using in porn, is to get the boys to think of the women as disposable whores, not as your mother, your sister, or your girlfriend. It's a very important mechanism for propaganda, that an ideology to retrain boys away from thinking as women of humans towards thinking of women as disposable objects to which you can do anything you want. It doesn't matter.
How does it filter into relationships between men and women, or relationships between people? It's interesting that one of the things you've talked about, and this is hard to talk about without getting sort of explicit, but sex must end with the money shot in mm-hmm. pornography. And you've talked about having a conversation with a young woman who talked about having a boyfriend who had a deal breaker. What can we say about that? How far can we talk about that? Because I think it's kind of a graphic, but it's a very good illustration of how these sort of porn scenarios or tableaus make their way into real, or try to make their way anyway into real,
exactly.
real relationships.
And I think it's very important for people doing this research, and especially I would say this to Dr. Lay, that you need to speak to young people, because this is where I get my information from. As a college professor who goes around the country lecturing to different colleges, I ask them their experiences. You know, I'm aged out of the experience of on the dating scene or the hookup scene. So I always say to them, tell me what it's like to live in this culture. And what you hear over and over again, especially from the women, is especially the men are asking, and I'll say this, to ejaculate on the face and often in their eyes. We know from a study that's about to be published that that is one of the number one things that men are at when they're asked, what do you want to do to a woman? It's ejaculate on her face and into her eye. Mm-hmm. Now, when I was growing up, we had not heard of such things, and we very rarely were asked for such things. Now it is common amongst my students. So either we have to explain that somehow young people have caught a virus, which says that boys want to ejaculate onto women's faces, or something has shifted in the culture. And what we know without question, that pornography is what has shifted our culture in ways that we haven't even begun to document. We have 40 years of research, but only now is it really coming out, the incredible harm that porn is doing to young people. So what we know, and what I hear, and what the research tells us, is that increasingly when men and boys use porn, they lose interest in having sex with real women. The reason reason for that is that the women will not have the porn sex that the men have been brought up with. So this is like asking a whiskey drinker to go back to beer. When you have brought up a boy from 11 on porn sex and then asking him to get into the sex that women want, which is more intimate, we're not talking, you know, getting married, having sex with one person for the rest of your life, but we're talking about fun, creative sex. Women on the whole are not looking out to get ejaculated on. They're not looking out for rough anal sex. So these women often say no. So what happens is the boys lose interest. So they get more and more into their pornography. We also know, by the way, that another factor that happens is they increasingly seek out prostituted and trafficked women because they go to women who can't say no to porn sex. And those are women who are being pimped and who, for the fear, if they say no, they could be murdered or certainly beaten up. So we know that. We know that boys who watch more sex, watch more pornography, get increased levels of impotency, have problems around sustaining erections and ejaculation. And what we have found lately is that there is an increasing number now who are becoming addicted. There is now research coming out that maps the brain, maps what happens when boys are exposed to pornography, that we do know that what is going on is an increased level of addiction to pornography. I was recently at an ITAP conference 2 weeks ago, and this is mainly actual therapists working on the ground. And we asked a question. There was about 250 in the room, and we said, how many of you are actually dealing right now in your offices with men and boys who are addicted to porn? And every single hand went up. So we need to be listening to the people who are actually out there working with young people and to say, what is your experience? What are you hearing from them? And what I put in my book was not just the academic research and listing all the studies, which are crucial, but also listening to young people. And I think this is what's going on in the porn debate. People like David Lay, I don't think, are really engaging with the age group that needs to be engaged with to hear what's happening.
Let me ask you this finally, in less than a minute, so keep that in mind. You also say the movement, your movement, cannot only be about what's talking about what's wrong. You have to offer, as you say in your book, a mobilizing vision that will entice people to join. Would you just finally say something about your effort to get people to be thinking about this and talking about this?
Yes. So I am founder of a group called Culture Reframed. If you go on our website, we're building it at the moment, and we're building parents' programs and programs for professionals to help build resilience and resistance in youth to the porn culture. One part of that program, which is a very important part, is offering a vision of what a creative, fun, healthy sexuality looks like, a sexuality that has not been hijacked by the porn industry, but a sexuality that you are the author of, because we argue that everybody has the right to be the author of their own sexuality. And that small group of men in LA do not have the right to colonize the sexuality of an entire generation of boys and girls.
It's Gail Dines, professor of sociology and women's studies at Wheelock College in Boston, author of the book Pornland, How Porn Has Hijacked Our Sexuality. She joined us from a studio in Boston. I also should mention, she's founder of that public health nonprofit called Culture Reframed. We'll put a link to that on our website. Professor, thanks for the time.
It's a pleasure. Thank you for asking me.
Radio West, a production of KUER News, the program produced by Benjamin Bombard and Elaine Clark. I'm Doug Fabrizio.